This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Young Americans have always followed their dreams to New York City or L.A. More recently, Seattle and Austin have been a magnet for new college grads. But why are young professionals checking out of cities like Cincinnati and Memphis? The answer to what attracts young professionals and what drives them away is critical to the economic future of cities across the country. And they're beginning to market themselves not just to gray-haired CEOs, but to a much younger and hipper crowd. Demographers say that the number of young professionals is a major indicator of a city's economic revival and growth. A well-educated, technologically savvy group that puts relatively little strain on government services and drives economic innovation. So how does a city attract them or drive them away? Why do you live where you do? What attracted you to move or stay after you got out of school? If you're thinking about relocating, why? And what would lead you to pick one city over another? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we also have an email challenge for you today. In 50 words or fewer, sell the city where you live to young professionals. Again, 50 words or fewer, why should a young professional move to your town? totn@npr.org. We'll begin our conversation, though, in Baltimore, Maryland, and joining us now is the executive director of Live Baltimore Home Center, Tracy Gossin, and good of you to be with us today.
Good afternoon, Neil.
So why market Baltimore to young professionals?
Well, because, number one, Baltimore is a fabulous place to live. We have very high quality of life, and we are extremely affordable. We are a nonprofit, and that's what we do. We've been around for 6 years, and we did a big market research study, and we found that professionals with no children was sort of the low-hanging fruit that we could go after pretty easily and that would really live in the city.
Low-hanging fruit. Now, that'll get them to move, won't it?
Well, when you're a nonprofit, I'm not Coca-Cola. I wish I had billions of dollars to spend on marketing, and we don't, so we have to be a little more creative. And younger people just, they love the urban lifestyle. It's convenient. We're arts and culture and restaurants. Baltimore was rated one of the top cities for arts and culture just a couple years ago by a major magazine.
And now we see why you get paid to do that. But Baltimore has other sides of its image as well. We've all seen homicide life on the streets. We've read stories of burned out neighborhoods. It's a city not without its problems.
Yeah, but I don't think we're any different from any other post-industrial city in the country. The thing that's very interesting about Baltimore is, number one, the scale of the city. It's very large. We're talking 75 square miles of livable space. We have the same population Boston does. They have it in 45 square miles.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can find your very urban row house on the water to a house in an old mill town with a yard and a garage, and you're still in Baltimore City and you're 15 minutes from work.
Now, again, why the focus, though, on that low-hanging fruit, a young professionals?
Well, because the financial factor, I mean, nationally, you see now the youngest population ever are first-time home buyers. I mean, you have kids coming right out of college. Instead of renting a place, they're buying a house bigger than what they need and bringing in a couple of friends to help rent, and then they'll take it over in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when we compare ourselves to, say, Washington, D.C., where the average price for a house in D.C. is about $375,000.
Tell me about it.
Or it's $105,000.
Yeah. So the idea is if you can attract people presumably right out of college or graduate school, and they get one of these houses, then they're going to stay there. And when their friends move out, presumably a few years later, the kids move in.
Absolutely. The biggest influencers on where you live in this order are where you work or go to school, your family, and your friends. And the word of mouth power is huge. We have what we call our I Love City Living Ambassadors. It's a network of over 800 people, and they're constantly helping the groundswell of promoting our message. And we host parties, and we have happy hours, and it's constantly letting people know that, I know you may know this part, but you haven't seen this part of Baltimore, or you might want to check this out.
Are there cities or other campaigns like this that you've used as a model for Baltimore?
I have to say, no, we've never seen another city really do it as aggressively as we do. We have a website, livebaltimore.com. We get about 25,000 visitors a month. We launched an advertising campaign in Washington, D.C. last year, specifically going after that audience. And we do a lot of things, like we train real estate agents. We go after businesses with their corporate attraction and relocation. So that we're kind of trying to hit people from every avenue. And it's the power of information. If you can arm the consumer with the right information, they'll make the choice to pick Baltimore City, because once you start comparing things, it's a no-brainer decision.
When you do the market research, you say these people want the urban environment. What are they looking for? Is it authenticity? Is it a relatively cheap place to live? Is it culture? Is it music? Is, you know, the nightlife? What is it that they want?
The answer is yes. It's all of those things. Usually with the younger person, and really like 30 years and younger, you're going to get, I want to be close to work. I don't want to commute like my parents do. I'm not sitting in that traffic. I want to be where the fun is, bars, restaurant, arts and culture, where things are happening. But you also start to get people when they get a little bit older, well, you know, I'd like maybe a garden or a garage. I definitely want off-street parking. And what's fabulous about Baltimore City is you can buy a row house on the water, or you can buy a single-family detached in a very, what I might call, like, leave it to Beaverville, you know, suburban neighborhood, and you're going to spend $125,000. Where else can you do that?
Change, though, never comes without tension. There are entrenched interests in Baltimore who may feel that this emphasis on attracting new people is slighting them.
We have never seen that. What we really do is we can help neighborhoods market themselves. We have 250 neighborhoods in this one city, and it's hard to create sort of name recognition for yourself. So with some neighborhoods, we'll help them with creating house tours to get people in your neighborhood, doing festivals and flea markets to get people sort of through your door off the main thoroughfare so that they can say, oh, well, I didn't know that this was here.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're sort of probably referring to gentrification and issues like that. The Baltimore City right now, we used to lose, according to the census, 1,000 people a month net at the end of the 1990s. We're now down to 400 people a month. That's a significant change in the attitude and atmosphere of the city.
Hmm. What's the next group to go after this crowd?
Well, we're going to keep pushing in D.C. We're still raising money for that. And next year we are going to launch a marketing campaign targeted to the Hispanic community. If you've done your research, you'll see that Baltimore was one of the cities that really missed out on the immigration insurge into cities. It's one of the reasons why Chicago was able to stabilize their census numbers. And we're going to be going after that. And what we want to do is sort of skew it from a holistic approach that says, start your small business here, grow your family here. Because that's a very entrepreneurial group, and they're very attracted to what Baltimore has.
Yeah. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Tracy Gossin is executive director of Live Baltimore. We spoke to her from her office right there in Charm City. We have our first email responding to the email challenge. This again, sell your town to young professionals in 50 words or fewer. This from Mike Conway in San Francisco. Calm and warm, another Monday takes shape. Dogs frolic in the park while their owners lay out to tan. At a cafe nearby, hip patrons sip coffee, savoring their youth and beauty. This urban scene, so fresh and perfect, begs the question, does anyone here work? If you have an advertisement in 50 words or less for your favorite city, send it to us at totn@npr.org. Joining us now from member station WHYY in Philadelphia is Carol Coletta, the host of the show Smart City, which originates from NPR member station WKNO in Memphis, Tennessee. It serves as a salon to talk about city life, and it's good of you to be with us here on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil.
Tell us a little bit about your work to help spruce up the image of Memphis. Where did you start, and what were some of the challenges?
We started because corporations in Memphis were having a difficult time recruiting young professionals to the city. And when we went in and looked at the problem and talked to young people, what we found is that before coming to Memphis, their impression of the city was that it was a slow southern town with nothing to do. Yet once they arrived in the city, experienced the city, they had a very different opinion. So we began to look at why that gap in opinion, in perception of the city existed. And what we found is that many of the images that various organizations in Memphis were displaying on websites, in brochures, in all sorts of media, were in fact old images. They were of slow-moving riverboats. They were of Elvis. And in some ways, you would look at those images and think, my God, nothing's happened in this town for 30 years. So when you raise the awareness of that, those are easy things to begin to change. But you had to raise the awareness of it. You had to realize it was happening. And then we began to make those changes and a lot more.
Now, I know you were listening when we were talking with Terry Gossin. How does your campaign compare with that in Baltimore?
Well, I would, first of all, let me compliment Baltimore. I think they're doing a wonderful job. They also have a readily identifiable market to target, D.C.
Yeah.
D.C.'s an expensive market. They're next door. It's easy to commute. Baltimore's cheaper, so there's a clear competitive advantage.
I'm not going to pick on you too much about that easy to commute, maybe at 3 in the morning, but go ahead.
Well, it's closer than southern distances, shall we say.
Closer than Richmond, okay.
Okay, but nonetheless, so that makes sense. But Neil, it's a conundrum when you begin to explore how you brand a city and how you then communicate a message, because there are two problems. One, and she mentioned this as a problem. I mean, if you had all the money, if you had as much money as Coke, it wouldn't be nearly so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're trying to communicate the image of a city, you're not talking about a typical ad campaign. You're really not talking about logos and slogans and color palettes. You have to think about, what is the city's story? What is the authentic story? What is the story that can be told about this city that other people will repeat, will tell again and again? Because it has to be, the message has to move from person to person. There's really no other way to tell the story. So in Memphis, in addition to changing the obvious things like the websites, we have too, as many cities have done, I have started a young adult organization that is really focused on making the city more easily accessible to young people, getting them to experience the city in a new and easier way, and that's been terrific. Memphis is not the only city that's done that. In fact, in May, we hosted what we call the Memphis Manifesto Summit, co-hosted it with Richard Florida in Memphis. We had 100 people from 47 cities, and we had 18 of these organizations represented. Now, I think the organization in Baltimore clearly is doing some very sophisticated work, and again, bravo. But there are a lot of cities that have started these organizations. They are run by young people, so they have a view of the city from a young person's perspective, and they know what they want, and they know what they want the city to become, and they're all working on that.
Our phone number again, 800-989-8255. Let's get a call from Dawn, who's with us in Tallahassee, Florida.
Hello.
College town. You just graduating?
Graduating in, I think, 52 days.
But who's counting?
Who's counting? I'm calling because I'm a young professional, or soon to be professional. I'm a musician, actually. And my husband and I have spent some time in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, while he was getting his master's there. And we found that to be a fabulous town to live in. It was one of the most culturally and, for him, technologically dense cities that we've explored as of late, and we are looking forward to moving there in December.
So you're going to move and then look for a job?
No. we'll be getting jobs beforehand.
Aha.
That's
so,
the plan, at least.
So your mama did not raise an idiot?
No, she didn't.
Okay. But it was the cultural and the vibrancy of the place that attracted you?
Yes. My husband's master's is in robotics, and
Carnegie Mellon sure is there, yeah.
Yes, at Carnegie Mellon, and it is the robotics capital of the world, or it has been called that. And as far as for me, I'm an opera singer, and there are so many venues for me to perform in there, and we just haven't found a more warm, loving, culturally diverse city in the nation, and I'm very, very proud to sing Pittsburgh's praises.
Good luck, Dawn.
Thank you.
We're talking about cities selling their images and why you move to one city over another. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Thank you. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing how the right kind of marketing can attract a new crop of young professionals to cities trying to make a rebound. And you're invited to join our discussion. When did you decide to leave the city when you have kids? I'm sorry, did you decide to leave a city when you had kids? Why? Could you have been persuaded to stay? What makes you decide to live one place over another? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. We also have an email challenge for you this hour. It's your turn to spin your city. How would you pitch it to young professionals? Why is it such a perfect place to live? 50 words or fewer, please. totn@npr.org. Our guest is Carol Coletta, who's the host of Smart City, which originates from member station WKNO in Memphis, Tennessee. And we also have with us in the studio here in Washington, Gary Gates, a research associate and demographer at the Urban Institute. And welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we've been talking a lot about what cities are doing to attract young professionals to move into their city. What are some cities doing to drive them away?
Well, I think that's actually a challenging question. I think it's cities that focus a lot of their economic development activities only on businesses and corporations and kind of big ticket items. I think in the end, those strategies, while they might be an important part of making their cities viable and successful, if they ignore what you've heard Carol talk about and what you've heard talked about in Baltimore, if you ignore the focus on people and the places, these neighborhoods in the cities, then I think you know that you have the potential of not necessarily driving people away, but certainly not doing anything to attract them.
Mm-hmm. So you really have to do something to go. You've got to be, as the expression I guess is, proactive.
Well, I think so, and certainly today, in today's kind of economy, clearly cities are competing against each other. And I think there is some level, this idea of branding your city mm-hmm. suggests that there is a competition out here. And young, creative, innovative people are mobile. And that's very different than coal and steel, which were what we produced in the past. And now we produce, whether you call it the knowledge economy or, as Richard Florida calls it, the creativity economy. The point is that the inputs to that production are mobile. And so cities have to compete for them.
Carol Coletta, it's the second time Richard Florida's name has come up. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, Gary works with him all the time. He might be better. He actually was the first guest on my public radio show. But, Gary, you'll do a better job of singing Richard's praises.
Well, Richard is a professor at Carnegie Mellon University who has a book out now called The Rise of the Creative Class. And trying to do this in one sentence, he basically hypothesizes that the fundamental key to economic success now is creativity, and this is the driving force. And I've worked with Richard on several papers and helped him with one of the big chapters in the book.
Let's get back to listeners, and we have another responder to our email challenger, this one from Fairbanks, Alaska, and Scott McRae. A small-sized modern college town situated amidst the beauty of the last frontier, Fairbanks offers the perfect package of career, culture, and community. Where else can you be late for a world-renowned symphony performance because there were moose blocking your driveway? And let's get another listener in. Tony's on the line from Indianapolis.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share with you an experience. I moved to Indianapolis about 4 years ago from New Orleans, actually. So initially I was dreading the move quite a bit. But I think Indianapolis is the best-kept secret in the Midwest. It's an extremely affordable city. We've got lots of friends in San Francisco, New York, wherever. And when we tell them about our home, four bedrooms, three and a half baths, they're just falling over themselves when they hear it only costs about $250,000. So, you know, it's just extremely affordable, yet at the same time, it's a thriving downtown, lots of wonderful restaurants, and I've just really turned out to love the place, although not initially thinking I would.
The image of Indianapolis, at least the stereotype, doesn't leap out at you as the place of excitement.
The place of what, I'm sorry?
Excitement.
I didn't get that.
Maybe I didn't either. It doesn't lend itself to a lot of maybe the most exciting place in the world.
Oh, well, actually, you know, we have a lot of festivals. There's a lot going on in the summertime. And I think the proximity to Chicago, if you ever feel the need to get that kind of a bus, which I was there last week, did some power shopping, it's only 2.5 hours away. So we have the added benefit of a close proximity to a major city to get those benefits. Mm-hmm.
Well, Gary Gates, Indianapolis is a relative success story as far as I understand it.
It is.
And how does it compare, for example, to a place like Cincinnati, which is losing the brain drain equation?
Right. And, I mean, I can't say I'm an expert on the Indianapolis community, but certainly in the Midwest, cities like Indianapolis and Minneapolis, St. Paul area, both have seemed to succeed where other cities have had challenges. And, you know, again, I think one of the issues there is the focus of city officials and of the policymakers there on these kind of people and place-based amenities that are just increasingly more important in the formula for success.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller in and go to Dylan, who's in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I have been in the tech sector, and I've lived in San Jose, I've lived in Washington, D.C., I've lived in St. Louis, and right now I came back to Atlanta partly because of the weather. It's a lot warmer down here than it is up north in the winter. But also, you have a lot of areas right outside of the interstate perimeter that are small towns that allow you to have a lot of property. But you're 10, 20, 30 minutes away from a downtown that has festivals, that has concerts, that has major sports teams, hockey, baseball, football. Well, they kind of have a football team right now, but it's a wonderful place, and the one of the primary drivers, especially having come from the San Jose area, and from the D.C. area, is that instead of having to pay $250,000 for a house, a reasonable house, I can pay $100,000 and have 3 to 5 acres of land, which is with a nice 3 or 4 bedroom house.
And I assume from that, and maybe I'm making a jumping to the wrong conclusion, but it sounds like you might have a family already.
I do have a small family.
Uh-huh. So that obviously is a more important issue for you than somebody who might be interested in an apartment downtown.
Well, the apartment downtown it was something that we were able to do when my family was much smaller, but now having schools, having a little bit of land, having some property is something that's important, and something that I had been thinking about when I was, it was just myself and my wife,
mm-hmm.
Sort of planning out the future and realizing that if I can go to a place where having the laying the groundwork for the goals that I have in 3 to 5 years become easier and much more accessible. Then that's the city that I need to go to, and that's the reason why we chose Atlanta in particular.
Well, congratulations and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, Carol Coletta, it sounds that in some respects the American dream is unchanged, the move to a nice house, a nice place to live, but in some respects the desires of this very desirable group of people for many communities, these young professionals, is a little bit different.
Well, it's interesting to listen to the caller from Atlanta. I actually have 2,800 square feet in downtown Memphis in an old cotton classing building, raised a daughter there. There's a new wonderful public school and within walking distance, and it really provided everything, and still does, everything I need. So, and we're seeing a lot of not only young people moving into the central cities of our country, but we're also seeing people who now have raised their families moving back to the center city. So it's an interesting, I think that vibrancy and energy on the street that a downtown provides is actually one thing that is very attractive to young people and the as Gary pointed out, that most mobile group of our society. 34% of the 20 to 29 year olds move each year, 22% of 30 to 34 year olds. They're the most mobile in our society. So if you're going to get someone to move to your town, get them while they're young.
And they also only have jobs on average, a given job for like a year or two at that age. So again, another shift from the time, for instance, my father was with the same company for 40 years.
Another email contestant, this from Minneapolis. The city of lakes with 50 miles of trails, paths around a lively downtown with theater, restaurants, nightlife, and shopping downtown connected by Skyway, cool and warm year-round. That's from Greg in Minneapolis. And here's one from Aaron in Cleveland. It's affordable. You can get a well-paying job, be in a culturally diverse community, own a home or a condo, have car, have a family, go to professional sporting events, be a member, and visit several museums, go to concerts, plays, and orchestra, and still take a vacation. She points out that's exactly 50 words. Diversity, a word that she right. used in that email, that's an important issue for a lot of people.
Yes, that's actually something that I've looked at quite a bit. And going back to your comment also about the difference between, say, Minneapolis, Indianapolis, and Cincinnati, one of the components that we've looked at, Cincinnati has had some very kind of public actions around gay and lesbian issues that were particularly disdainful and revoking ordinances that provided civil rights protections. And I think that cities
need to think there's a law that prevents any laws
exactly. And I think we found, for instance, in some of our focus groups that we've done with young people, that one of the things that young people looked for in cities were rainbow flags, showing kind of the presence of a gay and lesbian community, at least a public acknowledgement of that. And I think the point was not that these young people are not necessarily gay or lesbian, but they see that as a sign that the city is welcoming and tolerant of people who are different, whether you have a tattoo or whether you have piercings or whether you're gay or lesbian or a woman or speak a different language or are of a different race or ethnicity. This idea of tolerance, we believe, is a critical component, and diversity is a critical component to creating vibrant, innovative, and creative cities.
And obviously another community that has relatively smaller strain on government services and a relatively larger impact on urban revival.
Indeed.
Okay.
Indeed.
Let's go to Lucy, and Lucy's with us from St. Paul, Minnesota. Hello, Lucy. Did I push the button correctly? Lucy, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to talk about how to kind of preserve the culture of a city once so many other people start coming there. I've lived in St. Paul for the majority of my life with a small stint in Washington, D.C. and Portland, Oregon. Love both those cities as well, but my family is here. I grew up here. I love the amenities of a small city with, you know, Minneapolis next door and, you know, plays and sporting events and festivals, yet nature within half an hour away. I'm also worried about the so many people are coming here, and we've actually shifted to a more, like, conservative, I guess, population, too. All our people, you know, we had kind of liberal roots and preserving of nature, and now I'm worried as more people come in, it's shifted more conservatively, and people are whining about taxes, and I'm wondering how to preserve the quality of life or the culture that they came for. What someone could do to kind of keep up with everything that we had and with all the new people to keeping that initial kind of culture.
Yeah, Carol Coletta, I mean, it may play out differently in terms of the politics of Memphis, Tennessee,
right.
But certainly change, again, new people come in, things change.
Well, they do, and I think that's why it's so important for cities to understand who they are, the special DNA that is theirs, and make sure that no matter what happens, no matter how much change occurs, that is preserved. I agree with the caller. You can quickly destroy what quickly can be destroyed, what you came for, if you're not careful. So I think understanding that is crucial.
Mm-hmm. Lucy, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
We're discussing cities marketing for young professionals to move into their town. If you've got an advertisement for your town in 50 words or less, TOTN at NPR.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. And let's go with Roger in Kansas City.
Hi. I'm the gal from Baltimore, a town that actually I know quite well, said earlier, asked where you could find a town that was interesting and friendly and artistically alive, where you could buy a house for $135,000. And, well, you can do that here in spades. This is, I used to live in Washington. I used to think that Baltimore was a Midwest town that was transplanted to the East Coast. And this, Kansas City, is the easternmost western town. It's It's a spectacular place to live, very friendly, artistically incredibly alive with the Kemperman and the Nelson Atkins Museum. We're going to break ground on a new performing arts center in the springtime. It's a city that really cares about itself, and I live in Independence, Missouri, just a short ways from downtown, about 2 miles from Harry Truman's home, where I bought a 330-square-foot house for $235,000 last year. I think you'd be hard-pressed to do that many other places.
So you're telling me the buck shops there?
Sprint is just is building its world headquarters in Overland Park, Kansas, which was, I think, until recently, the largest construction project in the entire country. So they were sold on this being a great place to do business and to move their employees, because you get all the really great things that you would get in a bigger town, and the folks that struggle with traffic in Washington, Baltimore, well, they'd think they'd died and gone to heaven if they moved here.
Okay, Roger. Thanks very much.
Sure. You know, one of the comments I was going to make about all the affordability that people have been talking about, it is important to understand, though, that one of the dangers of success for all of these cities is that their housing prices will go up. And in fact, in many cases, that's what a lot of the politicians want. They want that increased tax base. And one of the reasons why housing gets expensive is that as places become known as very livable and desirable places, more people want to go there.
Let's talk to Kelly, who's with us in Detroit.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm
sure.
A big fan of the show.
Thank you.
We here in Detroit have some serious economic and social problems. The city is really, they're trying hard. I mean, they just built some new, they built Ford Field, they built Comerica Park. My family's actually involved in building a new Hilton Hotel downtown. General Motors just took over the Renaissance Center, which is pretty much the biggest building in Detroit. But it's really fallen down, and I was wondering if you guys could shed any light, any suggestions for, I don't know, any politicians listening, as to ways that they can bring people from the suburbs, where all the wealth of the city kind of is, back into the city itself.
Okay, we're going to have to be quick with it, Kelly, but thanks for the call. Gary Gates?
Well, I think, as I kind of mentioned before, I think starting to shift their focus away from all the stadium development that they've done and now start focusing on the neighborhoods and the people. And people have talked, several of our callers have mentioned the draw of festivals and those kinds of things in the city. Good public transportation, all of those things can help.
And a safe city, too.
And a safe city as well.
Final contributions from our listeners on their thoughts. Iowa City, great live music scene, local and touring acts, numerous great bookstores, new and used, 4 public radio stations, great public schools. A walking city can live without driving everywhere, numerous coffee shops and local bakeries, low unemployment, world-class research hospital, Big Ten Sports, that from Tim Holman. And finally, from Michael Dvorak, Denver, can a million Californians be wrong? That's the most terse. Thank you both very much. Carol Coletta was with us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Neil.
Carol Coletta is the host of Smart City, which originates from member station WKNO in Memphis, Tennessee. And Gary Gates, coming into Studio 3A, we appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.
Gary Gates is a demographer at the Urban Institute here in Washington, D.C. After the break, we'll talk with NPR's Guy Raz, who's been covering Iraq, and we'll take your questions. What do you want to know about life in Baghdad? Are you interested in politics, sports, shopping, business? 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.